so fucking dark in here?
Because he just turned this light off.
It's so fucking hot in here. We turned off the lights.
Wait, are you blind? Can you not talk when you can't see?
No, it's just weird that it's so dark in there.
I think you're having a stroke, man.
Yeah, it's really not dark.
I'm having a stroke.
Are you stroking out?
No, I would be dick in hand if I was stroking out.
Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Damn Art Majors.
I have a clicky pen, and it's going to be really hard not to click the pen.
You are hearing the soothing voice of James Dudders Dudley.
Hello!
And we also present Aaron Early has returned.
Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
I, of course,
long time
host Adam Buccafusco.
On today's episode, we'll be discussing wood. Is it? Will it be? Would it be? Wood.
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Holy shit.
You had a real NPR thing going on.
Yeah, no,
I felt like I had to feed into that.
Right on. So, if you are just joining us, and we took a week off.
We did. A lot of things happened.
A lot of things happened, and, you know, we have to first and foremost go to the Aaron Watch 2014.
Is that your, like, breaking news?
Yes.
Local breaking
yeah, like
news?
That?
Like, a goat got stuck in a raft. It's now officially a semen.
Aaron Watch 2014 has officially come to a close. He has returned, everybody.
He is sitting across the table.
He is here. He's got a smile on his face.
And both hands intact.
He is itching his ear. It seems.
So how'd it go?
How did what go?
Your disappearance.
It was terrible and life-changing.
That's deep.
Mm-hmm.
About as deep as your fist in that shark.
Yeah. That's something I don't wish to remember, but it stuck with me for the rest of my life.
You got some gnarly scars from it.
Mm-hmm.
All emotional.
It was Jabberjaw.
The Jabberjaw?
The Jabberjaw.
With the funny hat and everything?
No, there was no hat.
Oh. Didn't he have a hat? I thought he had a hat.
No.
No? No.
No. For those that don't know who Jabberjaw
is, Hanna-Barbera's son?
He was the star and the namesake of a late 1970s cartoon called Jabberjaw. And he is a anthropomorphic shark. And he has the voice of Curly from the Three Stooges, and he often makes Rodney Dangerfield jokes.
And you just want an autograph? Is that right?
No.
How did you meet Jabberjaw?
He met me, in the sense that he's become as well known for his... Well, in the show, he was in a rock band
mm-hmm.
with kids.
Sure. Well, that's where you'd put a shark.
He was the drummer.
Right.
And he was excellent. He was a great drummer. He put Ringo to shame.
Really good. Yeah, no, totally.
He and the kids would go around and they would defeat villains and they would solve
Which
mysteries and
crimes. Which is typical of every rock and roll band.
Yeah, I mean, he came into light at the perfect time. The shark craze in the 70s was, you know, rampant with Jaws and all that. And,
yes.
You know, why not have a slapsticky shark come into play? But unfortunately, and I have direct experience with this, in his old age, his slapstick and crime-solving talents have turned into a lust for sexually assaulting humans.
Really?
And he does this by leaping ass-first towards his victim and engulfing their forearm with his anus. And then he then proceeds to, this is tough for me, shake around wildly and scream, "No respect. I get no respect." He's a menace. And he's, in my words, he's a great white sexual predator. And he's terrible.
He has got to be stopped.
He does.
He has got to be stopped.
He's had such experience with crime
mm-hmm.
and villains and everything that he's also an escape artist. And he usually leaves the scene with no trace except for a person's conscience that is destroyed by a shark anus.
Motherfucking Jabberjaw.
And a hospital bill.
Well, I'm sorry that that befell you.
Yep.
I'm not. I think there's a lesson to be learned here, Aaron.
What's the lesson?
You know what it is.
Never leave the house.
That's right.
Yeah. He's everywhere.
He's watching.
Always watching, always waiting.
He's
smelling for blood in the water.
He's a land shark.
He is. You can't escape that.
It's like the beer. It's in every Harris Teeter you go to.
Speaking of beer,
this is round two of What Are You, the Listeners, Drinking?
Congrats to Isaac, who won last episode. Yeah, sure. Contest.
Yep. And we have...
We got three new beers we're going to try out.
Three very different beers.
Very different.
We had Leah from Instagram wrote in with... Don't even know how she did that, because we don't have one. But she wrote in with the Ovila Abbey Saison from Sierra Nevada. And then we've got Holly from Winston-Salem, writing in through Facebook, with her favorite pick, a Red Oak. That is the Amber Lager out of, I guess it's Burlington.
No, it's not, yeah. Who's Holly? Tell you what, go on. Holly is a listener from Facebook.
It's an excellent choice. Good job, Holly.
Yeah, next time you're on I-40 heading westbound, you will see off the side of the road Red Oak's brewery.
Yeah, you can't miss them. North Carolina.
They do, apparently... tours for the kind of cheap, and you
is it on 40?
Yeah,
they're right off 40. It's right off 40. You can't miss.
I've seen it. I thought it was on like 87 or something.
It's before 40 and 85 split.
85, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
You do a tour, and apparently every tour ends with a beer tasting, and you get some cool, some cool merch. And I've actually myself I wanted to do that, and I guess even Groupon does. A deal with them. So check out the brewery of Red Oak.
We actually have Red Oak to thank for a lot of the laws that changed here in North Carolina as far as microbrews go. They were part of the... they were one of the main signees or people who lawyered up to help change a lot of the laws that allowed microbrews to finagle with the distribution laws, allowing... I don't remember exactly what happened. It was a couple years ago. And that allowed for microbrews to pretty much blossom here in North Carolina overnight. And then the third write-in, another listener, Jason, from Facebook, he wrote in with Grolsch. He said, why not? It's been around forever.
Way to go, Jason.
It is a premium lager since 1615.
Yep.
Holy crap.
Yep.
That's really old.
So we will be, throughout the episode, we will be tasting these.
Oh, and real quickly, the Sierra Nevada, the Abbey beer here, was actually a team-up between Sierra Nevada and an Abbey that, I guess, grow their own hops and stuff. And
they probably had a traditional recipe for beer as well.
Yeah, and they, collaborated, and they came out with this, so that's pretty cool.
They had a baby, and it was a Vila.
They have a cool label with a monk on it.
So we will be, all three of us will be sampling these tasty treats, and we will be revealing the winner at the end of the episode for this round.
That's right.
If we have a bottle opener.
That's what you have me for.
And of course, the winner of this round will get a sticker prize package mailed to them, and they will be entered into the finals. So yeah, the winner of the What You Drinking contest finale will receive a prize package, including some promotional stuff and maybe a T-shirt or something. Or I think we're gonna do something custom.
The overall winner,
Something custom like a drawing.
They'll get a custom Damn Art Major doorknob hanger.
What?
I don't know what you're gonna do with it, but you'll have one. You can put it on the door to your studio.
There you go. There you go.
I was very kind, and I sent off a sticker to Michael, whose Twitter handle was Team Holt, because he was the runner-up.
Right.
Team Holt!
Team Holt. And he said, thanks.
Oh, awesome. Glad he appreciated it. So it's, what is it? It's been like 4 weeks since the three of us have all been in a room together.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of tension.
It's been a long recovery.
Yeah, no, totally. Dude, that story was intense.
Yep.
It was tough. It was tough to listen to.
But it's nice to be back. Everybody's back together. Everybody's having a good time.
The band's back together.
Yep.
Record some new songs.
Yep, yep.
Nothing is special.
Play some tracks. Anybody down. Got some news? Anybody got some plugs? Anybody got anything going on?
It's hot out there, folks. Stay warm or cool, whatever.
I was more referring to, like, personal profession, blah, blah, blah.
I don't think I'll
be a profession.
All right.
I don't think I'll be able to work in my studio because it appears that our AC is no longer working.
Yeah, dude, it is hot as Hades.
Is it actually turned on?
Yeah, it's on, but it's not very cold.
Is the vent open? Yeah. Yeah.
Join us next time
as we suffer from heat stroke.
Holy shit.
There's Aaron and Adam trying to fix the AC, none of which are HVAC approved or certified. I'm moving right along with a sculpture through my company, which has been warm. I think I've definitely, lost some weight working out in the sun.
Yeah. I see you've replaced that weight with a brand new shiny mustache.
Yeah, it's my my attempt at becoming a walrus.
Are you trying to be a walrus?
Absolutely.
Are you trying
to have one of the snow shovels?
What?
The things on the front, the trains. The big snow
shovel. Oh, I see. Yeah, okay.
I guess it's not a shovel. What is that called?
A cow catcher?
It's called a cow catcher.
Yeah, dude.
I thought it was for snow.
But
I think it's for anything that's on the tracks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, including...
A plow.
Including bovines.
This was... I guess I allowed all of my facial hair to just kind of get scruffy. Sure. And then I took a razor to everything but what was above my upper lip and below my nose and left that behind.
It's a bold look.
It's
a bold, daring look. And I for one, I'm for it.
It
caught me off guard when you walked in.
I think I look ridiculous. Especially seeing as how half of my facial hair is blonde, so it doesn't even show up as soon as you step 5 feet back. But, whatever.
That's where Rogaine comes in.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. No, it's great. It's, everything I eat I get to taste 15 minutes later as I, suck it out of my mustache.
Right on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to the facial hair club.
I don't know. I don't know how long I'll be in it. In other news... I went back to the internet, and as all of you listeners, I'm sure, absolutely love, I found more amazing things on Craigslist.
You went back to Craigslist?
I did go. I go to Craigslist every day.
Do you really?
I do.
Why?
Because it's basically like going through North Carolina's garage, and that's enjoyable. Yeah, I've actually found
some... I think it's more like going through North Carolina's dumpster that just happens to have some old bed frames in it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the nice thing... Okay, this is one thing I will say about Craigslist, is you can find a lot of reclaimed wood on there. Because there are a lot of guys that actually, they go out and tear down barns. Well, if they have surplus, or they just want to offload a lot of their surplus, will post on Craigslist. A lot of people, you can find a lot of tools that are actually in really good shape.
So what did you actually find on Craigslist?
Oh, what I actually found on Craigslist, after, rummaging through North Carolina's garage, I rummaged through North Carolina's emotions.
Oh,
and
yeah?
I went back to the Misconnections.
I know a lot about those at the moment.
Yeah.
Misconnections.
And I have three of my favorites here. I don't know if I'll read all three. And then, of course, I have to end with a haiku that I found that I feel truly speaks to me on the haiku forums of Craigslist.
Right.
But first, let's start with Unknown Discovery. This one was not submitted, male v. female. This one was just Unknown Discovery. I'm begging you, please, please... Please get out of the state you are in. It's a trap only a sensitive person could set. Lured by paradise and sunshine, and then someone hits you with a rock. It made you cry and gave you flashes that soaked you to the bone. What a change. I begged you not to change, but you did. Remember that. I wrote it in your yearbook. Never change. But you did. And now I'm paying the price for it. My wife wants a BMW. I hope her boy toy can give it to her. She totally tricked him for it. She is attracted to people that are bi, pull her. And she is also greedy.
Since wait. How did she spell bi, pull her?
P-O-L-E-H-E-R. And she is also greedy.
Like Amy Poehler.
Since the change, she has become quite a cougar. 50 Shades of Grey have got nothing on her. She still got it, even at 50. Hottest bitch I've ever known. That was unknown discovery.
It's, you know, it's love when you refer to your loved one as a bitch.
Yep. After I found that gem, I discovered this one, which apparently is a post in response to another post. I couldn't find the original post. But this one is a response to, read this, you'd be surprised. This is a woman for male, somewhere in North Carolina. Not surprised at all, but we're done. Surprised? I know what you're up to. I know that there is definitely someone else.
What?
All the things that you thought I would never do, they're all in the making. I was supposed to be your girl. Your one and only.
Yeah, she was.
But instead, you chose to find others on Craigslist.
What?
Well, guess what?
The same place in which she's writing this?
Well, guess what? Me too. The pussy. The love that you so believe is yours has went to Craigslist too. I watch you, your style, your attitude, and I can even feel the way you have changed during sex. It's over. I'm done. Yes, we are still together, but know that I am taking my time so you can feel the pain you caused me. Welcome to my world now. Welcome to a place that you never thought I would take you. You really thought that I didn't pay attention? Surprise. Now the hard part is trying to figure out if this post is about you. Everything at home will seem okay, except the suspense of you trying to figure out, am I the one that wrote this? Just know, even though you and her have not had sex yet, just know that I talked to her. And yes, she is in on this too. You definitely don't have it like you think you do. Your phone has proof, but I have more. No need to tiptoe around, because I have always been alert.
Oh, there's probably like 200 guys on Craigslist right now who shat themselves thinking that their lady wrote that. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
All right.
I wasn't aware that Craigslist was affiliated with LiveJournal until today.
Yeah, pretty much.
I have no idea what LiveJournal is, but Craigslist, it sounds like similar.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then to end all of our journeys into the misconnections of Craigslist, I have a haiku. Fruit Bigotry, written by
Fruit Bigotry?
Fruit Bigotry, written by Tempel Bill. Don't tell anyone. White seeds edible, black not. Watermelon, fool.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Fruit Bigotry.
Thank you, Tempe Bill, for bringing that to a close, that journey into Craigslist.
I think that title sucks.
I don't title these, man. I just copy and paste, and then press print.
Do you do that from your computer at home?
Don't have a printer at home. Do it on my lunch break.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Nice. If you had a printer at home, you could print them at home.
I would.
And stop wasting company time.
I'm not. I'm on lunch break. I'm clocked out. And if it makes you feel better, I bought the paper myself.
Fair enough.
What about the ink? Busted.
Burn.
And then just for that, I'm going to get fired now. Thanks.
Yep.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Yep. Can I have your job?
No. I'll make them hire me as a contractor.
Just think, if you ended up getting his job, you would have access to his sweet workspace.
And speaking of sweet workspaces,
I was gonna finesse it a little bit more, but if you just want to like dive headfirst into it,
you know me, man. There's no finesse. There's just straight up.
Well, I was actually kind of inspired by an article that I had found about artist studios, and they each, I think they had a good dozen different artists and their studios. And what I instantly found was how everybody has a very different approach to setting up their workspace, even if they're in the same field doing similar things. Yeah, you know, I just kind of wanted to talk about, you know, our workspaces. We're three artists who do similar and very different things, and we have very similar and yet very different workspaces. And I thought maybe, you know, some of the listeners would be interested in kind of like what our creative zones are and what they're like. Aaron, we already know yours is hot as shit.
It is. It was nice earlier today. I guess everything decided to shit out 3 hours ago.
Yeah,
it's really... I'm sorry, dude. I'm like melting over here.
Tyrus looks like he just got out of the pool.
Oh, sorry.
I think the best part is like I should have worn a black shirt so you couldn't see this growing ring that I'm like my brown shirt is getting darker brown now.
To reiterate, apparently our air conditioning just died.
So this is the Survivor episode of
as we get continually more and more loopy and start seeing mirages.
Oh my
shit.
God!
It's okay because as we're dehydrating ourselves, we're filling ourselves up with alcohol. So yeah,
it all evens out.
Yeah.
So do you want to describe your workspace and kind of your mindset when it came to designing, setting up and?
Well, yeah. So this workspace is new.
Right.
We're currently in mine and my partner's studio/office. I have one corner, she has the other side of the room. But a common trend through all of the studio spaces that I've had is I don't really care about having a lot of space. I usually have a lot of shit crammed into one space, but I, you know, organize it on the wall via shelving systems and boxes underneath tables. You know, I don't care about having a lot of room to move around because I usually work relatively small. And if I'm working on a large painting, it's, you know, either hung on the wall vertically, so it's taking up whatever the depth of the canvas is, that amount of space. And I'll work around it. You know, I'll move stuff aside if I've got a larger piece to work on. So essentially what I have is a sort of battle station scenario where there's a central desk. It's large. All of my stuff is within arm's reach from that, either stacked under the table on a cart or hung on the wall beside me or in a drawer directly in the table. In this case, in this studio, I have a large architect's desk. It's about 3.5 feet off the floor. It's almost a standing desk, which I like because sometimes it's nice to be literally hanging over the work that you're working on. It's also nice because it's a very deep desk, so I have my desktop computer at the very back. Underneath it, I have a 3-tier cart that houses all of my paint, spray adhesives, brushes, mediums, thinners, solvents, rags, and what have you. Beside that, I have a cooler that's full of all of my hand tools, and there's a few power tools. I have a comfortable stool, I have a clip light, I have my easel, and a projector.
And some homemade shelves.
Packed away, yeah, I have some homemade shelves.
Line in the perimeter there.
Yeah, but the idea is that I like a north light scenario.
Right.
Like, I like being, having a window in front of me where the north light is coming in, which you get is a very natural, cool tone across everything. There's no silhouetting of the canvas that you're working on and stuff. In this situation, I don't have that.
Right.
So I usually work facing one direction. Don't really move around. Like I picture having a horseshoe around me of things that I can just reach and grab.
Mm-hmm.
And it works out to my benefit. I mean, it makes you work smaller. But I'm currently doing mostly illustration anyway, so that can only be so big.
Is there something you feel like your workspace could benefit from, or something you really wish you had in it? Like, something that would just, like, offset it?
In this particular space, yeah. I could use a flat file cabinet.
You have a lot of filing cabinets.
A flat file cabinet. Not a filing cabinet, but one that you can house paper and old drawings
sure,
in.
Sure.
And store them safely in a flat manner. Because right now what I have is a lot of these large flat pack boxes.
Right.
And the paper, I have so much of it that gravity ascends on it and it causes the paper to cup a little bit. So every time you pull out a piece of paper and want to start drawing on it, you have to either iron it or flatten it out somehow. It gets damaged over time. It's a pain in the ass to get to, and it's all just kind of shoved into a space right now. Also, it would help with the storage of old drawings.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. I have a couple of their flat art boxes. They're made of, like, essentially, like, foam and, like, a covering. And I got two of them in two different sizes. One I use for all my sketches and, you know, all my doodles that I don't want to throw away. And I just, you know, this may turn into something in the future. Put that in one. And then all my, like, complete flat pieces and a lot of my prints and whatnot that I need just for storage, I put in the other. I got them from free for work, but you could pick them up. They're art boxes. A couple bucks. I mean, like,
yeah.
20 bucks, and then, you know, they're as thick as, like, 6 inches.
Those the black ones?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I've seen
they're
those.
About 6 inches, allow for 6 inches worth of paper, which is, like, practically a career's worth of paper. So, I mean, it's a great investment. The way my studio is set up is I got my computer desk set up. I have my 2009 iMac. This is the model that still allows for disk drives and stuff like that. I really don't like the new Macs because they're all soldered together and you have to buy an external drive to run disks and things like that. So I'm really going to try to run this 2009 one into the ground. I upped the RAM a good bit to keep up with the speed. I have an external monitor because, as you guys know, I do a lot of, like, video stuff and animation stuff, so that's really beneficial to go back and forth. Then when it comes to my illustrative stuff, I got a drawing table. But surprisingly enough, my favorite thing to do is just kind of sit on the couch and just doodle in a sketchbook. When it comes to trying to work on a fully, like, an actual piece, not just, like, a doodle or a sketch, like, I'll go to the drawing table, set up my light box, and continue, you know, working the details. My area is surrounded by art, whether it be my own or art that inspires me. I know you guys have seen my North Carolina print from Draplin Studios. You know, a little taste at home, I guess. I got plenty of busts and sculpts, you know, from companies like Gentle Giant and Diamond Select and things like that, that were, you know, designed by some of the comic artists that I love. So my workspace is full of color and, you know, I feed off that stuff. Wacom tablet, you know, things like that. And then when it comes to the traditional stuff, when I'm just kind of sitting around sketching, I actually brought a couple of my favorite tools of the trade, including a GraphGear 5000.
That is a fucking awesome pencil. I bought
this
one of those.
Pencil, man,
this is the shit.
It's changed my art completely. Yeah. You know, I used to use the cheap mechanical pencils that you get in, like, a 12-pack.
Mm-hmm.
But if you guys out there, if you invest, like, I think I paid, like, $7 for this thing.
Yeah.
And then the refills are so damn cheap. And you get, like, a million of them for, like, $3. But it's a GraphGear 5000 0.5 pencil. I also brought in a eraser stick here. So it's a regular eraser, only you can kind of control the length of it a little bit. And then, you know,
not it's a to, dog penis eraser.
Well,
it's like a dog penis.
It may sound really stupid to say.
Lipstick.
To say or, you know, hark on, oh my god, that pencil's great, it's amazing, it, you know, it's
the
best pencil ever.
The control that you get with this pencil is spot on.
It's extremely important to have a utensil that fits in your hand comfortably when you're drawing. Because
definitely.
If you're like me, when you're drawing, your hand gets sweaty because you're constantly, you know, gripping in a specific way. You don't want to have a pencil sliding out of your grip. You don't want to have to constantly be repositioning. You want to keep that flow and not actually even think about the fact that you're holding an implement in your hand. In this case, that graphics pencil Adam was talking about, they're like, they're aluminum and they're precision milled. They have an extremely highly textured grip that does not move out of the texture of your fingerprints. They're heavy, so they kind of, you let the weight of the pencil do its thing in some cases. It's about the weight of a dart.
I've never used one of these before. It actually is weighted. I do throw darts. We actually have a dartboard at work. But it's actually weighted very similar to a dart. Yep. All the weight is in the front of this.
Yep.
You don't feel anything in the back. What's funny is this grip actually looks identical to a couple of the darts we've got.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like it's a machined aluminum dart grip.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And it's even the way the lead comes out is very similar to...
Well, the last product that I brought in, and my company actually makes this, and I don't always necessarily like proprietary brands, but I have to give them props. This one, I've seen professionals at trade shows actually using this. It's called the Vanish Eraser, and it claims to be 4 erasers in 1. I don't know about all that. It doesn't really do the job of, I would say, a kneaded eraser, but I used to use the, what are the white rubber erasers?
The Staedtler ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I used to think that those were the best erasers money can buy. This thing is $1.50, and it is the best eraser I've used. It doesn't tear the paper. When you're trying to get graphite off, it gets it off as hard as you need it. Like, if you want it gone, it's gone. If you go lighter and just kind of want to touch it up, it can do that. It keeps its shape really well. What's really cool about it is if even if you're just holding it and you just kind of like touch it a little bit, you can start seeing that the it starts kind of particling away there. If you're erasing large pieces at once, the eraser itself, the eraser...
Earthquake.
I got like carried away. The eraser dust will actually form an even longer single strand opposed to a bunch of eraser dust. So it actually holds its form a lot better. So yeah, those are just a couple of my tools of the trade, and I just thought you guys would be kind of interested in that stuff.
I have another suggestion I'm going to make after Richard. Were you done?
Oh yeah, I'm done. Oh,
after Richard talks about his studio space.
Well, no, go ahead, because we're on the topic already.
Okay.
Right, might as well stick to the topic.
Yeah, there's a British company called Sugru, S-U-G-R-U, and Sarah bought me a sampler pack of this for either Christmas or my birthday 1 year. And at first I didn't really know what to do with it, but it's a moldable rubber that acts like a moldable epoxy. So like it has a working time where you can shape it to any form or purpose that you want, and then it'll set up and be hard. But it's rubber, so it has a compression aspect to it, a durometer or a shore or whatever you want to call it. But it has some sort of chemical in it that it eats into the surface slightly, and it will not come off. It will not break. It's extremely strong, and it comes in like black, bright red, bright blue, yellow, white, all these different colors. I've seen people cover cameras in the stuff, like little, they'll mold it like Play-Doh and put like little strips of it on the sides of a camera so that it creates a grip. It also is high vis, so you can see it from a distance, or it can be black. I've fixed shit that's broken in my car with it. I've attached a webcam to the top of a computer at work with it, and it's never coming off again. But one thing that dawned on me, and I had ran out of the stuff at the time, pencil grips. Like, you just put a glob of it on the end of your favorite pencil and hold it as you would naturally, slightly compressed down, and you've got a perfectly molded grip for your hand that will always retain that shape, and it's not too hard.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah, the company's Sugru. I think it's like, you know, you got to pay international shipping for it, but it's an excellent product, and it's like food safe. I mean, it will never go bad. It's amazing stuff.
Cool.
Check them out.
I won't, because
Dick.
I use Ticonderoga number 2s when I'm drawing.
Well, your work studio is very different than mine, Aaron's.
For me, you guys are sitting there talking about how nice and small, and you've got the horseshoe where everything's in arm's reach.
Well, dude.
And then...
Let me say this. I have not had a sculpture facility in many years.
Yeah.
So you're in a whole league.
Then Adam, you know, you're more digital.
Sure.
The occasional, you know, paper. But generally, you're majority digital. I worked very briefly in paper, basically sketching out crazy ideas. But then I very quickly tend to move towards the shop, which that's the thing, is mine is beyond studios. And what's funny is I actually looked at the Huffington Post article,
mm-hmm.
and it was primarily painter studios.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple photographers in there, but there really weren't any sculptor studios / shops. And it's kind of odd. I've sort of got two studios. My home studio, which I'll talk about, and then I've got my studio at work, where I'm lucky in that my employer I'm permitted to use the equipment on my own time to work on my own stuff, which it's pretty much set up as your standard wood shop, you know, cabinet saw, band saw, mill, drill press, belt sander, and set up the way you'd set up any wood shop, kind of a free flow. Everything has its space,
you
its
have
location.
Stations.
You do, yeah. You have stations. You're able to easily move from one station to another. There's very clearly marked out paths
right.
that you need to take. And that's for safety. That really is the reason for stuff like that, is purely safety, safe use of tools. And also, if something does go wrong and a piece of wood gets thrown across a room, it's set up so that as the wood is thrown, it won't hit another station. It'll run into a wall or hit another obstacle. Now my studio at home, which is, we refer to it as the break room, because that's the first thing that came to my mind when we moved into this house, calling this thing the break room. It kind of looked kind of grungy and dirty and had tile floors.
I thought you called it the mud room.
Well, it's supposed to be a mud room.
Right.
But I refer to it as the break room.
Oh, okay.
But it is set up to where I mainly do... It's sort of like it's set up like a home shop. I've got your pegboard with the majority of my hand tools that I use on a regular basis just to fix things around the house and work on my truck. But I've also got, I was lucky enough to come across one of those large cable spindles,
mm-hmm.
Which I turned on its side. So it pretty much was like a nice round table. I put some casters on, some heavyweight casters on the bottom and mounted a radial arm drill press, too, which actually, Craigslist find.
Nice.
I got this really nice Craftsman benchtop radial arm drill press, which is absolutely the coolest benchtop drill press you could get. If you are in metals, metalwork, or just need a drill press, this is the drill press to get. The radial arm aspect means that you don't... It comes with a steel platform that you can adjust the height on. But then, say you want to drill a hole in like a something taller. You loosen the screws on it, and you can pull the entire drill press head out away from the actual drill the table that comes with the drill press. And you could set up a separate table or have just a freestanding piece right there. This thing rotates... I could drill things upside down. I don't know why I would do that, but I could if I wanted to. I mean, this thing is absolutely absurd. It has way too many functions that I don't even use. But the nice thing is it's an old Craftsman drill press, so it'll probably last longer than I do. And like I was saying earlier about the, you know, if something craps on this, it'll most likely be the motor. Well, the motor is just a bolt-on. So all you got to do is find a motor of the equivalent output.
That's what was nice about those, like, 70s-era Craftsman.
Yep. And so if I find a motor with the same output, maybe even a little bit more, I just bolt that on, attach the belts, and...
Does it have pulleys
mm-hmm.
on it? So another thing that I learned is you can take the pulleys off, and if there's multiple grades of them,
yep.
like if there's a large one, a medium, and a small, you can flip them around and change mm-hmm. whatever the speed is, and it also changes the torque.
The last pages of the manual have... an entire breakdown of this is, if you put the belt here and adjust the pulleys here, and adjusting the pulleys is simple as you take the belt off, there's a nut you loosen, and it basically takes tension off the belt, pull your belt off, and then the pulleys, they just have one simple little stop nut. Take that off, and you can switch the pulleys up. You could change it out. When I got it from him, he had two gears on there with a chain, and he had a slower speed but more torque motor on it. So he could actually use this thing.
So he's probably drilling through, like, heavier stuff.
He was drilling through. He was straight up putting... he was using hole saw bits in heavy and hard woods. So he just didn't need this anymore.
What we're talking about, Adam, is when your material gives you a lot of resistance, you don't want to risk breaking a bit or having the bit bite into the piece and cause the piece to start spinning on the drill. What you do is you change the torque ratio so that it works slower.
Oh, no, I know. Thanks, asshole.
No, you didn't.
And anyway, if you mess up, you hit edit undo. It's totally...
Anyway, my ideal space. Now, the one I've got at home is not ideal. The one I've got at work is close to ideal. But for me, it's everything out in the open. It's not like Aaron's space where everything's in arm's reach, but everything's out in the open. So that everything has a place, everything has a home. Ideally, I will return things to their home as best as I can. So when you're working and you sit there and you're like, I need my square right now, immediately. I can look exactly where my square is and just grab it.
With that being said, what is your shop missing? What do you need or want? What could you use a better...
Did you answer that question for yourself?
No, but...
Maybe next.
All right.
Ideally, honestly, I'm actually getting ready. I'm getting ready to build it myself. I'm going to be... There's two things my shop needs. One is I want to get a joiner's table, which is a traditional woodworker's table, generally a hard maple top with two vices on it. I want the bench dog vise on the side of the table, and then on the front of the table I want another woodworker's vise.
How big of a table do you want?
I'm hoping to get something that's at least... I'd like to get minimum 6 feet wide. I prefer 8. I've looked into this, and there are companies that will make them for you, but they're ungodly expensive. For lack of a better term, I'm going to be building myself a chainsaw vise. And it sounds horrific, I know, but it's basically a large wood vise.
Right.
That I can use to hold excessively large pieces of wood that then I can cut with a chainsaw and not have them dance around on me. And this thing would just be so ungodly heavy when I'm done with it that no one will walk off with it. I'll build it in such a way that, you know, I can sit there and prop a piece of wood up at an angle so it faces me standing up, and I can carve it with a chainsaw and not have, you know, not be working on the ground, not be having a chainsaw running near my ankles. I'd rather have be working waist height with a chainsaw a little bit more safely.
Nice.
So...
Oh, to answer your question.
It's your question.
Okay, to answer my own question that I didn't pose to myself. The one thing that I could use that I wish I had is a scanner that scans larger formats. I went to frigging FedEx office, formerly known as Kinko's. How much do you think it would cost to get 11 by 17 scanned?
I went there to do it once, and I don't remember how much, but it was ungodly expensive.
Motherfucking $6.
Yeah.
$6 an image to scan. Yep.
And you only have a limited time frame. Like, if your scan is incorrect or out of place the first time, they charge you an extra $6.
Can you believe that?
They are more quick to die.
Sure.
They're more quick to embed imperfections into the scanned image. And a lot of times, both my dad and I... my dad's a graphic artist. I'm a traditional artist. We both have bought new scanners before, and we'll scan something at the highest DPI that you can obtain, and we'll be looking through it to see if there's any areas that would need to be cleaned up or anything, and there will be a blurry section. It's just ever so vaguely blurry, or a random blue dot, which means that there's I can't remember what it's called. It's like a pixel loss or something. And it happens every single time you scan something in the exact same places, and it's just because the scanner isn't as fine-tuned or as high quality as the more expensive ones. And if you're looking to scan a drawing at an extremely high DPI and you want a high output print, so sometimes what I do is I'll do small drawings, blow them up, and print them on a bigger scale. I want them to be absolutely perfect.
Right.
And I can't get that with a normal scanner. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right. Well, this is a different episode, different taste
shop talk
episode where you kind of get to know like our process and a little bit more about like the way we work and whatnot. And I think there's value to that.
It's probably a good time to just mention that we're not sponsored by any of these.
No, we aren't, right? Like,
but if you're listening, you're not sponsored.
Like, the thing is, like, right, if Harbor Freight, right, and this is something Harbor Freight is great if you are willing to take the time to make them better. A lot of Harbor Freight tools are manufactured in the exact same places in China that the name brand tools are manufactured. Sure. And if you're willing to do your homework, you can find out which of those tools they are.
To back that up, when you're looking at canvases, like store-bought canvases, the proprietary brands of A.C. Moore and Michaels, same fucking canvas. Just repackaged. No. All comes from the same factory in China. Don't be fooled.
And the thing, the differences between the Harbor Freight and your Tractor Supply, or not even Tractor, your industrial supply Northern stores, Tool. Northern Tool and Equipment, Lowe's, Home Depot. The difference is it's the paint, but then also it'll be the brackets. What will happen is the Harbor Freight tool will not get a welded-on bracket. It'll get a bolt-on bracket. It's quicker and easier to do.
Yep.
The Lowe's tool will have a weld-on bracket that strengthens the entire overall tool and makes the tool a whole lot better. Brushes, like you mentioned, the brushes will be a lower quality, so the motor won't last as long. It'll burn out. The bearings will go flying everywhere. If you're willing to take the time, you can make any cheap Harbor Freight tool pretty much work for you, unless it involves electric. If it's a welder, if it's a plasma cutter, do not. Drills are terrible.
If you're looking, to put together the. the crappy MDF furniture that you bought from Target, go to Harbor Freight, buy a drill.
Yeah, then you'll be fine.
Don't worry about it.
Actually, though, I do say this. If you're going to get a battery-powered drill, the new lithium-ion, I have a Bosch set. Amazing.
Nice.
18 volt.
So, last week, we had...
Again, not sponsored by... We need to get some sponsorship.
Right. Last week, we had Meredith on. Mm-hmm. Or, I'm sorry, 2 weeks ago. Whatever. And we kind of did this impromptu grilling session.
Well, actually, it all started from Shoot From The Hip.
It did start from Shoot From The Hip.
Yeah.
Where I kind of did an
impromptu. We had some time to fill.
We just kind of shot the shit and posed some questions. Today, we are joined with Aaron Early.
Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. To
being raped by a shark.
Well, I mean...
Assaulted.
So, Aaron, you and I have been friends for the better part of a decade, right?
Just about. And, 2005? Five, yeah.
The story goes, we lived in the same dorm. I was supposed to live with a guy named David. David, at the last minute, decided to no longer attend ECU. You were living with a chap, if you will. You were living with a very...
eclectic individual.
Sure. Right. And needless to say, personalities were probably not going to
He was from, Mebane.
Yeah. Personalities were not going to mesh well. So, you and I had met, and I was just like, well, my room's open other than me, you know, like, why don't you transfer into my room? You did. And we've been friends ever since.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have lived in several apartments together, lived in the same apartment complexes together. There's probably some people who listen to this podcast who are like, holy shit, I can't believe these two assholes still hang out.
That's why they brought me in.
That's why we brought Dutters in, to add some new dynamic to the trio.
Well, I've known you for practically as long as that. Like,
you've known me since I entered the sculpture program in 2007.
Was it a 7?
I started school at 06. So I wouldn't have been in the program until 07.
So, with that being said, like, we know a lot about you. But, like, the listeners probably only know, you know, very top surface stuff.
Except for that one guy, Merwin. He listens a lot. I feel like he knows more than he's letting on.
He may know a thing or two.
He might, yeah.
So you're an only child.
Uh-huh.
And Dunders and I are people of, you know...
Sibling
families and whatnot.
Yeah. People of siblings.
Did you ever want a sibling?
Did I?
Yeah. Did you ever have a moment where you're like, man, I really wish I had like an older brother or sister to show me the light, or I wish I was that for somebody else?
Strangely, well, never when I was a kid. I don't recall ever having thought about it or entertained the idea when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Normally because I had such a massive amount of ADHD that I would find every excuse to entertain myself and not have to worry about, you know, having somebody to beat up on or be beat up by.
Sure.
Or compete with, which is nice as an only child, but it has its drawbacks, you know. But, you know, having grown up and being able to self-reflect and think about it, it would have been interesting, but I don't know how it would have panned out, so I have no real answer for that one.
Okay. But taking it to another degree, your relationship with your parents is not... only a traditional, you know, child-parent relationship. But I always felt like a sense of friendship between you and your parents. You guys are a small, very close-knit family, but you're also kind of sort of friends, like in a way that is really kind of refreshing. Yeah. and cool. I know your father is a big influence on your life, especially as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
You even mentioned that he does graphical arts and traditional arts. Do you feel like your mom has any influence on your artistic background?
Yeah. They, when I was growing up, I got nothing but support from them. It wasn't forced upon me to follow in my dad's stead or anything. I know in the past my mom has claimed that she couldn't even draw a straight line. But I've seen her draw a straight line. I mean, people say that you get your artistic side from, you know, hereditarily, but I don't know. It is a strange relationship that I have with my parents. I don't treat them as like a typical mother and father scenario. I mean, I love the shit out of them.
Right.
Absolutely. Sure. But
how could you not?
I am so alike to my mom and dad that it is a friendship. It's really strange. I can't expand upon it without having to sit down and, you know, reflect upon it for hours. And even then it would be this long diatribe that would just go on and on. But being an only child, and I see this with my partner Sarah as well. She's also an only child. She has more of a friendship with her parents.
Mm-hmm.
Than a familial daughter
child right.
relationship. Oh, sorry. I was gonna tie that together.
Sure.
I think the whole friendship scenario, even though it is more than a friendship, and not in a creepy way. Nobody listening, read into that. Fucking nasty people.
I'm sure they're not.
Being friends with your parents, for lack of a better phrase, leads to a different support system. I'll say that.
It's definitely a different dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I see that every time I see your parents and interacting with you and interacting with me.
Yeah, I think that's something I think... Because I've met your parents, and they interact with your peers in a very different way than, like, my parents interact with my peers.
Mm-hmm. And I think parents are always down to party.
Yeah. Well... And I think, I grew up in a situation that's a little bit more, I guess, atypical. Just a very...
Typical or atypical?
Typical. A very typical.
A little more traditional.
Very traditional situation. And I mean, part of that is that growing up, there was never a time... There's always been a child in my family
right.
growing up. Because me and my siblings are spaced very far apart. It's me, then 5 years later, I get a sibling, and then 10 years later.
Wow.
So there's always been a child, and so my parents have always been raising somebody. And so they never had the time to, you know, I was forced to formulate relationships with friends, you know, outside, not to say that you didn't, but that I couldn't, they weren't... They were too busy dealing with
a 5-year-old to deal with a 15-year-old. It's like a 15-year-old, go outside, take care of yourself.
And it's,
the 5-year-old, we're busy dealing with that.
It's typical that everybody needs to get, they have their quota of attention that they need. What I'm saying is everybody has an amount that they want to be heard, an amount that they want to share, an amount that they need attention. What Dudders is saying, because his family had so many kids in very different age range, that their attention was spread throughout several kids.
Mm-hmm.
So for him, he still needed to get his quota of attention.
Oh no,
so
I just yelled really loud.
There's that. As well as seeking out friends in the neighborhood, as well as seeking out classmates and teachers and whatnot. What I'm, my question to you is, you mentioned that you got ADHD and that you, you know, have this need to be heard, just like every other human being on Earth. Being an only child, do you feel that you have
more of a desire to be attention seeking?
No, that your parents absorbed a lot of that attention seeking, thus you didn't necessarily have like a huge friend group that you could, you know, kind of direct a lot of that need for attention to your parents, where they're not distracted by siblings.
I don't think so.
That was a really roundabout question.
I don't remember there being a scenario where I felt dissatisfied in the amount of attention that I would get from my parents,
mm-hmm.
or the amount that they would want from me.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say that I was necessarily showered in attention. I mean, like I said, I remember. So every kid has playtime.
Sure.
It's a time for you to divulge into your imagination, you know, make your own storylines and enjoy yourself. Most of my playtime was me entertaining myself with toys, adventures, obstacle courses in the backyard, you know, right. fucking around in the woods. Because there weren't a lot of kids in my neighborhood, and if there were, they wouldn't stay for more than a year because Fayetteville is a way station for the military.
Yeah, it's a revolving door.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, so I would get to know somebody just to say bye. And it's not that sad of a story. Don't, like, you know, feel bad for me at all.
But, I mean, I think, you know, I think kids are very adaptive, and they mm-hmm. learn to work in the situation they're handed.
Yeah, I learned to not care about that really fast.
Yeah, like, I mean...
I had myself to rely on. You know,
I mean, plenty. I grew up in the 50s. Like, I really did. I grew up in happy days. I had a very 9-to-5 father. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. You know, I had my younger siblings. I grew up in a I grew up in a dead-end street, cul-de-sac. There were a bunch of other kids my age. We would get our bikes, play, you know, basketball, play baseball in the street. We, like, I grew up in this very idyllic little suburbia.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it was, you know, it's not until you go to school, you know, kindergarten, really not until, you know, it's first and second grade that you realize that your situation is not what everyone else's situation is. And for me, it was it was like, oh, so not everyone lives in a dead-end street and just plays in the road?
Yeah.
That's not a normal thing? Because I went over to my friend's house, and I was like, they're like, oh, we can't play soccer. Our yard's not big. I'm like, just go play in the street. It's like, there's cars.
Yeah.
What? They don't stop? But
so I didn't have, I mean, in the same vein, I didn't have a sibling rivalry to have in my subconscious mm-hmm. growing up. I didn't have the need to impress or to win favor from my parents. I mean, I did artwork. I, you know, worked with my dad on artwork. He would show me things.
Do you work with your dad?
Occasionally.
I'm actually not familiar at all with what your dad does.
He does the graphic art for screen printing.
Okay.
Basically, any type of screen printing you can imagine.
Alright.
He is given a job or commission from the screen printer or the client. They might provide him with a sketch or a drawing to any degree of being finished. He refurbishes it, revamps it, and then creates a digital version of it, and then makes color process files for the screen printing aspect.
Nate,
and he's done that for 25, 30
now,
years.
Now, would he then create smaller art projects that he could work on with you, or like projects that you could, like, he would set up a project,
here, Aaron, this is something you can be doing that was similar, like, you could work parallel to him, if that makes sense.
Maybe. I'm a little fuzzy on that aspect. I don't remember a lot from a certain block of my childhood because of there was a type of medication that I was taking that fucked with my memory in a bad way, so I can't remember much. I remember he and I would...
I had the same problem. It's called concussion.
I remember...
I had that medication in college. It was called alcohol. Yeah.
I remember he would help me with some drawings. He would maybe start a drawing, and I would work on it some, vice versa. My dad used to do traditional painting. Mm-hmm. I do remember there was a scenario when I was very, very young. He was working on a painting of, I think, Dracula. He did a lot of fantasy paintings. He was very into Frank Frazetta and awesome. All that stuff. Yeah, it is awesome. So he was working on this really awesome painting of Dracula as the sun is rising over the mountainside, and you see him like recoiling back into his cave. And he's got like his cape up above his nose, and you just see his red eyes. He was working on it. He went outside to have a cigarette or something, and I guess he took too long, and when he came back in, I was painting. on it.
Nice.
But what I can't remember is I can't remember him being pissed off, and I can't remember if he left what I painted alone or not.
Nice, nice.
Well, I think that's going to pretty much wrap up this episode. We have to calculate the scores for the What You Drinking contest, and we will be right back to you guys with the answer. All right, so we've tallied up the results, and they are, wow, they're really close. In results there.
Oh, wow. Yeah. This is closer than last time.
You just said wee-wee.
Wee-wee! Wee-wee! Anyway, so, our third place, with 19.25, we had Grolsch. Seems like tradition just didn't quite eke out the win here.
Grolsch is delicious and crisp, and it reminds me of a Pilsner, but it did not win in this category.
No.
Sorry, Jason.
And second place with an absolutely tasty beverage and 22.5 points, we had Red Oak.
Hey, man, for the amount of plugging we did for Red Oak in the beginning, they totally won.
And then the winner with absolute, which I think is a beautiful combination of fragrances and tastes.
And spices.
And yeah, it is. Well, it's Saison. We had Ovila from Sierra Nevada and their conglomeration with some abbey somewhere. I'm sure it's on the bottle.
So Ovila will go up against...
it's the Abbey of New Clairvaux.
There you go. So Ovila will go up against... Old Curmudgeon, I believe? Will go up against Old Curmudgeon.
And a third beer that we discover, you know, at the next episode.
Yep. So for you listeners out there, please continue writing in beers. We will... continue selecting our favorites based on those that we can find. And if we cannot find your beer...
we feel really bad. We're trying. Trust
me. We will send... If your favorite beer is something that we cannot get our hands on, we'll send you a sticker. We'll send you a sticker.
Right.
Just for stumping us. For stumping
No, that's not suppliers. Fair. Because if you're choosing a seasonal beer, and it's... I mean, it's the end of summer. If you're trying to hit us with anything that isn't Oktoberfest, like, we're not going to find it. We're just not going to find it. So, I mean, cut us some slack. We're sorry. We're trying here. Damn! All
right.
Pigeons. Wait.
Ah, jeez.
The next one will be better.